Welcome to Wider View, the program that provides perspectives on the news outside the narrow confines of the mainstream media. I'm your host, Charles Dunaway. For over 16 weeks, thousands of demonstrators have been in the streets of Paris and many other French cities every weekend. Coverage of these demonstrators, who are called Les Gilets Jaunes, or the Yellow Vests in English, has been perfunctory in the U.S. mainstream media when they were covered at all. Since the U.S. shares many of the problems of contemporary France, I wanted to speak to someone who has been there observing and reporting on these demonstrations from the beginning. So I'm very pleased to welcome Ramin Mazahiri to Wider View. Ramin is the chief correspondent in Paris for Presse TV and has lived in France since 2009. He's been a daily newspaper reporter in the U.S. and has reported from Iran, Cuba, Egypt, Tunisia, South Korea, and elsewhere. And his work has appeared in various journals, magazines, and websites, as well as on radio and television. So let's pick up my interview with Ramin Mazahiri. This last weekend, March 2nd, 3rd, was the 16th act, as they call it, or consecutive weekend of demonstrations in France. Maybe you can start by telling us a little bit about how this movement started and who the people are who are involved in it at this point.
I think that there's a real mistake in the media to treat the Yellow Vests as something entirely new. I have been saying and, you know, writing that this is the same protest that has been going on since 2010. It is a protest against austerity. And it's not like these demands, what they have, are anything different than back in 2010 when I was here in France covering the raise in the retirement age. Back then, in 2010, they had three million person marches in 1 week. And that sort of puts in perspective how much smaller the Yellow Vest demonstration is. But between 2010 and 2019, we have had 8+ years of austerity. And we have to remember that austerity is accumulative. So it's not just the diesel tax, which is what the mainstream media kept harping on, and this is why when Macron backed down the first time ever, when he backed down on the diesel tax, the Yellow Vest didn't stop. Because it's not just one policy, just one tax, just one politician. It is 8 years of imposed far right wing trickle-down economics that has been going on since 1980 and which has not worked. And it's really amazing to me, but, you know, you just do a simple crunch of the numbers and France and the Eurozone, they have had a lost decade of economic growth. But this is a phrase which is never really uttered in the media at all.
Right.
Even though they have no problem talking about a lost score from Japan. But that's the background of this movement. This movement, as the Yellow Vesters tell me, it's fiscal, it's social, it's political, it is not religious, it is not ethnic. It's really, if you ask me to sum it up in one word, I would say it's an anti-austerity movement.
Mm-hmm. And what segments of society are among the protests? I mean, is this just coming from one area, from the poor, from the lower middle class, or what?
Well, you know, there was this impression in France that it was all the, you know, poor people. And, you know, we saw this, you know, the confirmation of this false impression back in December during Macron's, when he made his first minor concessions. He raised the minimum wage by 100 euros. And that's not really totally accurate. He did not raise it across the board. He attached conditions to it, but for journalists, it just became easier to say he raised it by 100 euros. But this fundamentally implied that he thought that it was really the poorest of the poor that were behind the Yellow Vests. That's really not the case. When you have a movement, a anti-government movement, a protest movement that is supported by 70% of the entire country, that shows you it's not just the lowest classes. It is obviously the middle class too. It may even be some of the upper middle class who are politically enlightened. the problem with austerity is that, you know, compared to 10 years ago, if you make 2,000 euros a month in France, net, after taxes, that's just not enough anymore. You know, that's just not enough because of it, because of, you know, steady 1% to 2% inflation, because you are covering for services the government no longer covers, because there are increased taxes on you instead of on, you know, record corporate profits, instead of not giving money to bail out the banks. It's just getting harder and harder and harder. And that goes for me too. And this is, so it's not just the lower class, it's the middle class as well. Mm-hmm. As far as the political composition of it, it is really across the board. When you have a movement that is supported by 70%, and maybe it's down to about 55% now, maybe it's 60%. You know, a lot of this, these polls, they go up and down. When you're talking about 50% plus for a anti-government movement, that is, you know, unprecedented, you know, I mean, here in France, and that's huge anywhere. The polls show that 70% of the quote-unquote far left, you know, best represented by a political group called the France Insoumise, Unsubmissive France. It's headed by Jean-Luc Mélenchon. They call them the far left. He's really the real left. He's not the far left with anarchists and, you know, serious communists. He's, you know, he's a reformist socialist. He's not a revolutionary socialist.
Right.
So 70% for them, and then also 70% for the far right of the National Front, now called the National Assembly, Rassemblement National. So what it is well, now this is, now you asked about the composition, but I'm just talking about here who supports it the most.
Right.
And 70% of the far right, 70% of the far left. And that shows that this is a, you know, red-brown movement, you know, in the main. It is the far left and it is the far right. And that's obviously because the far left and the far right, you know, in 2019 in Europe, they have so many things in common. They are both anti-imperialists, maybe for, you know, different motivations, but they still are anti-imperialists. They're anti-globalization. Perhaps for different reasons, but they're still anti-globalization. They are pro-sovereignty, again, with different reasons, but the same thing. So what, you know, this is something very similar, this, you know, where the most support is coming from the quote-unquote far left, the real left, and the far right, you know, which is really not even the far right, because so many of them are anti-imperialists, so many of them are anti-capitalist. You know, not 100%, but they are still, you know, anti-neoliberal capitalist, and that's very significant. Mm-hmm. They're anti-globalization capitalist, and that's very significant. It's very similar to what we see in Italy with the five-star movement. But we need to look at really, you know, France in the European context, because France really is not really a sovereign country anymore. Because they're in the EU, but much more so, in my opinion, because they're in the Eurozone and they don't have control over their own fiscal policies. And that's why they are submitting to austerity for 8 years, going on 9 years. And that's, you know, as I said, that's the real root of the Yellow Vest movement. It's the lack of, you know, lack of public influence in especially fiscal policy, because it's all about, when you talk to the Yellow Vests, we are working, you know, we are not people who are, you know, on welfare in the main. We are people who are working, but we still can't pay our bills at the end of the month. So it's primarily a fiscal movement. And then, of course, you can't have, you know, fiscal policies without political ideas behind them.
Yeah. Now, I think it's useful here maybe to just, because I think a lot of Americans probably aren't aware of the sovereignty issue regarding the European single currency and the fact that governments in Europe, you know, national governments in Europe have less than total control, to put it mildly, over their budgets, over what they, how they spend their money, and so forth.
That's an excellent point. You know, this is very different from the U.S. context, where American sovereignty is absolutely defended to the hilt. I mean, the U.S. doesn't really listen to the UN, to The Hague, to all sorts of international agreements, because they say, you know, we are America, and this is American exceptionalism, and they're going to do what they want. They're going to act unilaterally. And that helps them defend their people, theoretically, their citizens, theoretically. But that's an excellent point, that this is absolutely not the case anymore for not just the EU, but it's really, to me, it's the Eurozone. Because the Eurozone is such a unaccountable, not transparent, anti-democratic cabal of bankers and national finance ministers. I mean, they don't take minutes of their monthly meetings. They make these decisions and then they are imposed on the member nations of the Euro, and there's nothing that they can, that, you know, people can really do. For, you know, when we started just back in 2010, you know, we had austerity and it was to appease the confidence fairy, which mm-hmm. was, you know, popularized by Krugman over at the New York Times. And then when the confidence fairy of high finance, when that was satisfied, the main reason for austerity for 6 years or so in France was the fiscal deficit rule of 3%. This is a totally arbitrary number that they just sort of pulled out of the air, and there's nothing magic that happens, you know, when your fiscal deficit is under 3%, but that was the reason for it. And then France went under 3%, and Macron is saying, well, we're just going to keep on doing it. So they are submitting to these dictates from Brussels and from the Eurozone, even though they are not working. And to go back to your point, even though the French people don't want them. I mean, there's no doubt about it that they are not happy with trickle-down right-wing economics. But this is what we have been following for 10 years, and it is really gutting the standard of living of the average person. And thus we have the yellow vests.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting to me that Macron himself is a banker. He comes from the banking community, and a lot of the protests seem almost directed at him personally. And he certainly made some statements, I believe, that are, well, shall we say, insensitive to the plight of the working class in France. But do you think that a lot of this is anger really at Macron, but this is really the system that people are angry at?
I think it's both. I think that for sure, you know, just saying this is all Macron is a very, very short-sighted analysis. You had François Hollande, who campaigned on a anti-austerity platform and then did a complete 180. You had Nicolas Sarkozy, who had a completely corruption-filled administration. So there are, you know, France's citizens are, they have every right to feel betrayed and to feel distrustful of their politicians. Macron is just the latest in a long line of it. But then, you know, Macron, he makes it really worse. I mean, the guy is really, he's really pretty terrible. The problem with Macron is, like you said, that he is totally tone deaf. He is a former Rothschild banker. He comes from well-to-do parents. He married a chocolate heiress, and it's obvious that he's never worked a day in his life. It's obvious that he's never really suffered economically, you know, a day in his life. And that's why polls show, I just saw one today that I think it was about 70% of France saying that Macron does not understand the problems of the average French person. And then on top of it, he's part of a new generation that was raised under this false idea that the EU is what has prevented World War III from happening, that European unity, that the European project, that's stopped nationalism, and its nationalism was the reason for World War I and II, when of course it was, you know, capitalism and imperialism. Right. But Macron, I mean, we don't have, if we talked all 30 minutes about his gaffes, we would run out of time. I really can't stress to you, I mean, you know, president of the rich. I mean, there's just so many, you know, he is very aloof from the media. And part of the reason is that he makes so many mistakes. But more importantly is that he's from this new generation where technocratism is, you know, that's what really rules. Mm-hmm. He believes in technocratism and not in any sort of moral or political ideology. He believes that data should rule everything and that he totally fails to see the link that, well, once you have all the data, your interpretation of the data and your analysis is going to be colored by your ideology, by your morality. Mm-hmm. So he's so aloof. And then, you know, the guy's 41 years old. And for him to be acting like a stuck-up technocrat, coming from the background that he does, it is just not going to fly. He just cannot possibly be the father of the nation. And then you have to get into, and this is something which is never discussed outside of France, his personal life. For example, we have the Ben Ala scandal. Ben Ala is a 27-year-old guy that, you know, and this is the biggest scandal of Macron's presidency. This is bigger than anything. And it's been going on for a long time. And it's going to go on for, it seems like, many more months and possibly years. And, you know, I don't want to get into it too much because, I mean, I can just say it's revealed Macron trying to basically start his own Praetorian Guard. It's revealed the deep state's resistance to Macron. Ben Ala was, you know, Macron's right-hand man, and he was filmed punching male and female protesters and, you know, stealing guns. And having, you know, 7 or 8 the passports. And Macron must have known about all of these things. He mm-hmm. must have known about all of these things. Now, this is what you don't hear. Why would he condone this behavior when it was so obvious that it's going to bring him down? You know, the French Senate, they did a report. It was like the unthinkable indulgence that Macron showed 27-year-old Ben Ala. Macron is married to a woman who's 25 years older than he is. It's extremely unusual. Anybody listening to this right now, you go to Google and type in Macron Ben Ala. And the autocomplete is Macron Ben Ala amant, lover. Macron Ben Ala amoureux, in love. Macron Ben Ala couple. You have this guy that is covering up stuff, acting aloof in so many, many ways. Covering things up in so many, many ways. And then on top of it, he's looking down his nose at you. On yeah. top of it, he's not reflecting public opinion. On top of it, he's not being democratic at all. So you add up all these things. There's just this mistrust of Macron mm-hmm. In just about every possible sphere, including his personal life. And that's what the Ben Ala scandal is really talking about. I could care less about his sexual orientation or what him and his wife do or don't do. This is not, you know, interesting to me at all. But what's unfortunate is that this is a guy who could have been like Charles de Gaulle. He has complete control over parliament. He has complete control over his party, which is full of political newcomers. He could do so many things. He could be bigger than Charles de Gaulle. He's young. There's so many things going for him. But he stays so aloof. He just has a very right-wing ideology, and that's the problem.
You're listening to Wider View, a weekly conversation with analysts and activists rarely found in the mainstream media. Wider View is made available free of charge to radio stations nationwide, and a podcast of this show is available on iTunes, Spotify, and Google Play Music as Wider View Radio, and at widerviewradio.podbean.com. You can also follow us on Facebook at Wider View Radio.
Well, and you wrote an article that highlighted the barbaric, really, violence of the French police against the protesters. And, you know, this seems part of this same data-driven, no concern for morality, no concern for the people kind of thing that you're talking about with Macron. But you talked about 8,000 people arrested, 12 people killed, and so forth. Why do you think the Macron government is being so repressive and violent, or is this some other part of the French government that is doing this as well?
This is what people don't understand about France, is that Macron is not doing anything different at all. And that is going to maybe blow some people's minds. But, you know, during the 2016 labor code protests, if I recall correctly, there were over 4,000 arrests. I cannot stress enough that these yellow vest demonstrations, you know, I would say that they are 15 to 20% more violent than any of the other anti-austerity demonstrations that I've seen from 2010. It is simply not reported that tear gas is a regular feature at, you know, at French protests, that cops beating people up is a regular feature. There is absolutely nothing new. The only thing that's really new, I would say, during the first 6 weeks of the Yellow Vests, that was different. That was 20% more violent, because it really kind of was violence from start to finish. But ever since the first 6 weeks, it's very typical here, at least in Paris, which is sort of, I would say, the least virulent of all of the Yellow Vest demonstrations. The violence only happens at the end when the cops start to clear people out, you know, and they start pushing people around. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I would honestly estimate that because I've covered every medium to large protest movement in France for the past 10 years, I have been tear gassed, I would say, more than 100 times. There are activists who have been probably tear gassed 1,000 times. Arrests are absolutely not out of the normal. It's just about 15 to 20% more. Maybe I am underestimating just a bit, but, you know, I mean, there have been anti-government, you know, anti-austerity protest movements 2010, 2011, 2014, 2015, 2016, 2017. I mean, every spring and fall for almost 10 years, we have had unions leading major anti-government, anti-austerity protests, you know, every spring and fall. What really puts the Yellow Vests, they did it during winter. I have never seen that. I've never seen anything like that. That is as unusual as if they were doing it in August, because in August and over Christmas, France shuts down. It doesn't matter how much political momentum they have. It's so foolish. But they all go on vacation for Christmas, for August. But the Yellow Vests don't do that, because the Yellow Vests are this new sort of hardcore thing. And that really puts, you know, our needle way over in the red. But these tear gassings, these arrests, these water cannons, I mean, it is absolutely normal in France, and it's something that you never ever hear about. And it, you know, even I get jaded about it too. You know, I should be commenting on it every time over these past 10 years, but after a while it just sort of becomes normal. The rest of the Western world, they don't talk about it. I really don't see this as anything, you know, exceptional, because so this is just the way the French do it. It's very unfortunate, but it's very unfortunate for the French people. It's very unfortunate that people don't really talk about it. And it's the massive hypocrisy of it all. You know, it's the, you know, France is the birthplace of human rights. I mean, it just makes you want to retch. But I've been here so long, I guess I'm just a bit, I'm over it. You know, that article that I wrote didn't really even talk about it, because it's just like, you know, they've beaten everyone down here in France. I mean, we're just so used to it. We expect to go down to the demonstration and get our fair share of abuse. But if this happened in Iran, if this happened in Venezuela, there would be condemnations, sanctions, UN right. sanctions. So mm-hmm.
terrible. Absolutely. Let me cover one last point. There were a couple of incidents associated with the Yellow Vest movement that were decried as anti-Semitism. And now Macron has, as I understand it, recently declared that anti-Zionism is the same thing as anti-Semitism, of course, caving into the Israel lobby in France. Is there really legitimately anti-Semitism in the Yellow Vest movement, or is this an excuse?
Absolutely not. It is not an anti-Semitic movement. It is, you know, their demands are fiscal, social, and political. They are not ethnic. They are not religious. Anybody can join the Yellow Vest movement regardless of their religion, but what they cannot be is of a certain class. They cannot be, you know, part of the 1%. You know, they cannot be talking about how great Macron is. This is a class-based movement. It's not a religious or ethnic movement. And this slur of anti-Semitism is because the government will do absolutely anything to discredit them. And that's what Yellow Vest told me. And there's absolutely no doubt about it. You know, when you have a protest movement that is drawing members from every part of society, except for the 1%, you're going to have every sort of person there. And this is what Yellow Vesters tell me. They say, sure, there's some anti-Semitic people here, because anti-Semitism is a problem in France.
Sure.
You know, Islamophobia is a problem in France. But none of their demands have anything to do with Jews or Muslims or Christians. It's absolutely a way to slur it, and they will throw anything against the wall, and, you know, to see what will stick. There's nothing too low for them. However, this criminalization of anti-Zionism, it was so appalling. I'm 100% anti-Zionist, and I'm 100% pro-Jew. Love Jews, love Judaism. What a great religion. I'm Muslim. We wouldn't have Islam without Judaism. The Quran, the first 10, 15 pages is all we honor the chosen people of the Jews. They have been, you know, they have been elevated above other peoples. We honor apostles and the teachers of Judaism and Christianity. That's the first 10, 15 pages. We're all linked for Muslims, all of us Abrahamic people. And now that they are criminalizing anti-Zionism, which has nothing to do with Judaism, which is Zionism is a political project. It's an imperialist, colonialist political project. And it's only, bad for Jews. And there are so many Jews who hate Zionism. You know, some of the biggest pro-Palestinian activists here in France are Jewish. Calling the Alevist anti-Semitic, it does not hold any sort of water. It is absolutely just a way to discredit them. And then as far as this criminalization of anti-Zionism, it's just appalling. But we have to remember that pro-Zionist people, they hold a lot of power here in France. During Israel's last war on Gaza, 2016, I believe, France became the first country to ban pro-Palestinian demonstrations. France, Je suis Charlie, you know, the lovers of free speech, and they, you know, you just never know what a Frenchman will say next, but they better not say anything that's pro-Palestinian. So this is a very much, you know, a logical progression. But once again, it's the system. It's not just Macron. This is part of the West European, liberal democratic, bourgeois, pro-capitalist, pro-imperialist, you know, fundamentally racist and anti-woman system. You know, 17th century ideals here instead of 20th century socialist influenced ideals in Iran, in Cuba, in Soviet Russia, in all of these countries that are post 1917. That's not France.
Right. We ended by asking Ramin Mazahiri about the future of the Yellow Vest movement.
March 16th, you know, many people are saying that it's kind of D-Day. They're expecting, you know, some sort of, you know, big result. That's all I can say. You know, you have to check it out. They're saying that March 16th is going to be a very, very big day. Thing, you know, is that the only time the Yellow Vest got any concessions is when there was, you know, 5 or 6 weeks of just pretty shocking violence. What's going to happen on March 16th? I mean, what I'm saying here is that the French, they have this idea that just marching changes anything. And I've been here for 10 years in France. Maybe marching does in other countries, but they have lost time after time after time. I mean, you know, when they had 3 million people protesting the retirement age 3 times in 1 week, they still lost. And the only time I've ever seen concessions is when they got violent. If March 16th is going to be a time of many people, you know, marching around, well, then my hopes are not very high. You know, what I'm predicting is that we're going to see France's unions marching in the streets during the week, and then the Yellow Vests on the weekend. Because that's exactly what has happened, especially under Macron, but also during Hollande and also during Sarkozy. And Macron just announced this week that he is going to rewrite the unemployment system by himself. And for more than 30 years, you know, the unemployment rules, they have been a collaborative effort between unions and the union of bosses. Macron took it out of their hands. What I'm saying here is the Yellow Vests have only given a 3-month pause to Macron's constant wave of so-called reforms, many say deforms, which are so unpopular. And that's now getting back underway. Because Macron cannot learn, cannot change, cannot be honest, cannot be democratic, or at least he hasn't shown it so far, he's getting back to doing what he's doing. That provokes a major establishment protest. April in Paris is not going to be so pretty. But last thing I'll say here, it's not just France. It's the entire Eurozone. It's a lost decade of economic growth. It's the failed policy of right-wing economics. It's the failed policy of a liberal democratic, West European, bourgeois, 17th century conceptions of democracy instead of 20th century socialist democratic conceptions.
Well, Ramin, thanks very, very much for taking the time to talk with me.
Thank you very much.
That's our show for this week. Wider View is also available as a podcast at widerviewradio.podbean.com and on iTunes, Spotify, YouTube, and Google Play. If you have comments or questions about what you've heard, email me at widerviewradio@gmail.com or comment on our Facebook page at Wider View Radio. I'm your host, Charles Dunaway. Thanks for listening.